Accession number 19599, Real 4.
Richard Hilder, Real 4. You just arrived at Armanaga.
Armanaga, where the Carbonaires were part of a force which were going to invade the Japanese mainland, I believe. And we were reissued with our new tanks and equipment. Then, of course, the war stopped because of the atom bomb, and the Carbonaires were posted up to Rawalpindi. That was almost the end of my stay in India, because I took a road convoy up to Rawalpindi, up the Grand Trunk Road, a wonderful trip. When I arrived in Rawalpindi, I was posted home on repatriation, and flew back to somewhere in Cambridgeshire. In about November, arrived home in the fog in November.
To do what?
Well, I went on leave, and then I was posted. Eventually, I had one or two postings to different things as filling in jobs, but I had quite an interesting... The last posting I had was to a Polish transit camp where they were repatriating the Poles, and I was made adjutant of this camp near Kingston Bagpuis, a place called Kingston Bagpuis near Oxford. And as far as I can remember, that was the last military duty I had.
How did you get on with the Poles?
Very well, poor fellows. They'd had a terrible war, the Poles. And there were several of these transit camps in England where we sort of gathered them together and sent them on their way. Wherever they may have got to go to. It was just a matter of looking after them in the interim time. They'd had a bad time, a lot of them.
So when were you demobbed?
I was demobbed in 1946, July.
And did you go back to the farm?
I went back to the farm, yes.
What condition was the farm in by the time?
Oh, well, it was running pretty well by then. And my father had got tractors and things, which we hadn't before. No, it was running very well.
Was it still the same crops? Still
wheat? Oh, well, no, we were growing various crops. Flax was one which was quite interesting because there was food, there was clothes rationing, and they were using flax for linen. And I remember them growing a lot of flax.
What was that like to grow?
It was a good crop to grow. It was taken. It was grown on contract and taken to Thetford, to the flax factory, where they processed it into linen.
What were the main problems of growing flax?
I don't think there were many problems attached to it. It was quite a simple crop to grow. Rather unpleasant to harvest. It was a very dusty crop, and in those days it was... Harvesting was hand-operated. We had tractors, not horses, by then. and so it made it much easier.
You mean it was just pulled out by hand?
Pulled up, a lot of it pulled up by hand. They did have a machine, but that wasn't very good. We used to, I've forgotten how we, whether we got, they sent people in to help pull it or whether we did it ourselves. I think the German prisoners used to pull quite a lot of it. The German prisoners in England still then, and they used to come and help on farm work.
How easy was it to pull out of the ground?
Oh, very easy.
Where did all this dust come from then?
From the crop itself, it was a dusty crop. In the hot weather, it got very dusty, and in the wet weather, it got very. When you were moving it about, it was a dirty crop to handle. But apart from, I mean, that was nothing. It was a good crop to grow, quite profitable.
How tall did it grow?
It must have grown. It must have been a. Well over 5 foot high, I think. It's quite high.
Did it exhaust the land?
No, it was not too bad at all, no. It's quite a good grow. It used to grow it in a rotatory thing, yes.
Was
In
it rotate?
rotation, in a rotation, crop rotation. And yes, some potatoes, and we grew potatoes, wheat. Oats, barley, all the sort of normal crops.
Did you grow legumes?
We grew, beans, yes, we grew beans, oats, and what else? Mangels, swedes, all those sort of crops for forage, and also. Cash crops to sell, like the flax and the wheat, barley, fed a lot of the barley and the oats to farm animals. And then I went on.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yes, I farmed with my father, and he sold his farm, and I carried on then in a small place I'd got just up the road. Small farm, I carried on there.
Were these crops dictated to you by government?
No, not by then, no. I think we had to grow a certain amount of wheat up to, was it 1952, some such time when it was relaxed then. But I think there was still shortage of wheat in the country. If I can remember rightly, and a certain we had to grow a certain amount of wheat, make sure we grew enough for the bread, because there were bread rationing, wasn't there?
Yes.
Yeah.
Was the flax growing dictated to you?
No, I think that was pretty voluntary.
Was there any return to dairy farming or cattle farming?
My father didn't actually dairy farm himself. But I had a small herd of cows later when I left my father sold his farm and I had this small place of my own. I had a small dairy farm for a few years, but it became uneconomical because I didn't have very many cows. And then I concentrated on pigs, fat pigs.
On the same farm.
On the same small farm, yes.
What was the name of that farm?
That was called Mullett's Farm in Stock.
How do you feel now about having served in the Chindits and the Armoured Corps in the Second World War?
I feel that it was a very, very interesting time of my life. Very interesting. And things have changed so much that whatever happens today doesn't seem to be anything like the same. Military operations are so different. It's difficult to compare them.
In what sense?
Well, suppose you're... It's funny I should say that in a way, because I think that the Kosovo thing, I think that could have been operated as a Chindit operation, and I think it would have been, if you could modernize the what we had in North Burma behind the lines, I have a feeling that that could have been applied to the Kosovo. That's a funny thing, I should probably, a strange thing I should say, but when we were with the Chindits, we certainly didn't have air superiority, or I didn't notice that. And when, in Kosovo, there were apparently no enemy airplanes at all. And so I've got a feeling that an airborne force, you see, the airborne forces today are totally different from the Chindits, the parachute regiment and whatever. See, we didn't have that sort of thing. They operate in a much more faster way than we did. But I think we could have put blocks down in Kosovo, which could have been supplied by air and supported by air, and might have been more economical to the country itself. But that's the only reaction I've, modern reaction I've got. But it doesn't bear much weight, I don't suppose, because I'm fairly ignorant about military matters today.
Long-term effects from having served in the Second World War?
I think we all had. I think we all had. Not so much now, but I did have malaria for quite a few years afterwards, and possibly a slight touch of it even today. And the change of the seasons, sometimes I get a fever. But I don't think any of us would ever be quite the same again.
Any alterations in your attitudes or psychological alterations?
What, since when?
Since the war. Because of the war.
I think, after all, it was a hard war out in the Far East, and I don't think it did any of us any good at all. I don't think the rest of my life was fulfilled in the potential that it should have been filled. I mean, I had a good education and that sort of thing, but I don't think it improved my attitude to life or ability to do things, mentally possibly. I'm not saying I'm mental, but I think my attitude is probably not improved.